podcast called Traveltude. Traveltude is all about the way you think about the travel experience. Everything from the preparation, the anticipation, to the ultimate satisfaction of it all. It's a whole vibe. Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of the Traveltude podcast. About 20 years ago, I stepped foot on the continent of Africa for the very first time when I traveled to Dakar, Senegal. I can't believe it has taken me this long to make my way back here, but I've been here now since December 29th, and I am happy to be back. After almost a year of pent-up travel and suffering from no-trip phobia, I finally am able to release it all here in Dakar with my family. Today, my very special guest is Stephanie Kahn. She immigrated from the U.S. and has been living in Senegal, West Africa for 35 years. She is a wife, a mother of 4 beautiful daughters, and has 3 lovely grandchildren. Stephanie is also the founder and director of the Senegalese American Bilingual School. Hello, Stephanie. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Terry. I'm fine. I'm great. Yeah.
That's good. I am super excited to have you on the show today. I've been here in Senegal since the 29th of December and brought in a new year, and you have just been the perfect host and have just shown us a great time so far. And my excitement continues to just overflow. So I'm very excited to have you here on the show today.
Well, I guess some of that is me and some of that is just the magic of Senegal, of which I'm very excited to share with your podcast followers today. And of course, you know, I feel blessed having you here. And so I hope, you know, that this podcast will be seen by many and heard by many, and more will come and experience the country that I have grown to love over the years.
Now that's wonderful. So let's go ahead and get started and just, you know, tell our listeners a little more about yourself and about the path that actually led you to Senegal.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Baltimore, although I was born in New York. And I moved to Frankfurt, Germany when I was 12 years old, and my parents made Germany home. So living in Europe and visiting France and England as a young child, I learned about the diaspora and colonization, and knew that if I learned French in school, I could speak with people that kind of looked like me, and I was fascinated by that. So when I went to university, I did international studies, and my area of concentration was Africa. So one of the first things that I did when I graduated and earned a little bit of money, my first year out of school, I made the trip to Africa, visited Senegal, Mali, and Sierra Leone. Actually fell in love with Senegal then. And so years down the road, I met my husband in Europe, who was working on his PhD in Frankfurt. And we ended up marrying, we had our first child in Europe, and I said, I don't have a problem living in Senegal, and came actually by boat 8 days from Antwerp, Belgium, here, 1985, and have been here ever since.
Wow, that's pretty fascinating. By boat, huh? Yeah, okay.
And Senegal was kind of like the place that clicked the most with me. I have lived in several other African countries. I lived in Tanzania, I've lived in Kenya. My husband worked with the UN and was actually posted in Mali and Ghana. So I've spent extensive time in those countries. But Senegal is still my favorite, it really is. Something special.
Awesome, awesome. So, I know that you are the founder and director of the Senegalese American Bilingual School. Please just tell us a little bit about this institution that you built here.
I guess I can say it's an institution now, although it was not in my vision. It was not my ambition. I was just really trying to find a setting for my daughter, who was 4 years old. And we had just moved back to Senegal from Nairobi, Kenya. And she had a problem integrating the preschools. And I decided to start this experiment with 9 other 4 and 5 year olds. I had been teaching English at the university and at the American Culture Center, and had been reading up about early childhood and language learning, and thought, wow, this would be an interesting experiment. From 9 children in 1993, the school has grown to 1,300 students on 9 campuses and with a staff of over 200. So it's a bilingual program. Students come out fluent in both English and French, and they can come out with the Senegalese national diploma, which is called the baccalaureate, or an American high school diploma. And since about 2001, we've been sending students all over the world to study in, of course, the U.S. is a favorite destination, Canada, the Middle East, Europe, Asia. So, yeah. It's been interesting, and I actually love it. I developed a passion that I had no idea. I think I must have inherited from my mother, who was a very dedicated educator. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating story. And, you know, even our family members have had an opportunity, you know, recently to attend your institution. I call it the institution because that's what it is. And
that's what it is.
Yeah. And it's a blessing to so many. And, you know, the way it has grown, I mean, that's mm-hmm. outstanding, you know.
When we started the school, we had no idea that there were so many people looking for a school like ours. Many of the immigrants from Senegal and from other African countries, kind of scared with the adolescence and all that that means in the U.S. And it started sending their kids back. And then even we have, you know, many preschool age students who are coming from the U.S. back to Senegal because of childcare is easier. And also many, you know, Americans and from people from all over the world, really, who want their children to have kind of like a Senegalese experience. The U.S. State Department, we are the host of the YES program, which sends U.S. brightest students all around the world. We have those students coming in. So those, you have between parents who want their kids to be reacquainted with their roots, and also those who want their children to have a global experience, find SABS an interesting destination and institution, as you said, for their children to attend.
Yes, again, I say outstanding. You know, you're a hero to me, and I consider you a trailblazer, and I'm sure your work speaks for itself, so that's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It has been a pioneering venture, I must say. And yeah, we've had to make it up as we go along because we haven't had any real models to go by. So yes, I accept that we are pioneers and trailblazers.
Well, I was just about to say, in terms of models, that you are the model. And I'm sure that there have been plenty of people worldwide who have, you know, sought you out to kind of get some information on your model and how to build from that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So you kind of touched on this a little bit when you were telling us about yourself. But, you know, my question is, why Senegal? What is it that makes Senegal, and more specifically Dakar, a desired destination in Africa, in your opinion, and maybe from, you know, what you've heard from others?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I fell in love with Senegal. I think the history of the first president after independence, who was kind of like a poet and a politician, Senegal has been a hub for the arts, It was the host of, I think, the 1966 World African Arts Festival. And so those who have been interested in the arts, I think, you know, many in the urban areas in the United States have been acquainted with Senegalese dance, there's Senegalese restaurants. So there's the Senegalese presence in the US who, you know, people become curious. Senegal is probably the closest destination from the US. I think it's the shortest flight if you're coming to the continent from New York or from DC. It's cheaper than many other destinations. And Senegal is safer than many destinations. I mean, you hear a lot about Nigeria, you know, even Ivory Coast. So, you know, Ghana is nice. I've lived in Ghana. I prefer Senegal simply because of the art scene. I like the art scene here. But Senegal is much closer to the US and so cheaper, you know, in terms of a destination in Africa. And so it's, you know, a combination of things that make it, you know, a why not, and an entry point, a great entry point for discovering the continent.
Yeah. Awesome. So now, so while we're actually doing, you know, this interview, well, you know, we're in the midst of a worldwide pandemic. And so we, you know, have some protocols in place for coronavirus. So when I thought about, you know, making the visit, and especially during the new year, trying to cure some of my no trip phobia I was having because I hadn't traveled in such a while. One of the things that was very attractive was how Senegal has handled the pandemic and the coronavirus. So, you know, just a little bit, tell us about the successes that you've had, that your country has had.
Yeah. Well, I only have basically the U.S., what I hear about what's going on in the U.S. and what I hear about what's going on in Europe to compare, and certainly don't have anywhere near the positive COVID cases from people who are tested, nor people dying, nor people in, you know, I think it's called intensive care. I think you call it on ventilators. There are some theories that maybe we have some herd immunity because of having kind of the virus, the coronavirus has been around for a while, not the COVID-19 virus.
Right.
But some people think that maybe we have some kind of herd immunity. But the government did take measures that were not like taken in the U.S. For example, they did a lot of contact tracing in the beginning, and those who even had contact with those who had coronavirus were put in quarantine and isolation. They were taken to hotels. And so that kind of flattened the curve, as they would say, from the very beginning, because they extracted people from the community, isolated them, and it was costly, but I think it was well worth it. At times, we've had mandatory mask wearing, and we had curfews installed. And so I think at some point, Senegal was considered number two in the world in terms of the measures that that were taken to flatten the curve. And we are experiencing a bit of a second wave, but it's nowhere like people imagined. I heard Bill Gates said the streets would be lined with, you know, dead bodies in Africa. You yourself, you've seen that, you know, you don't get that feel. You see people are out and about and enjoying life because of the climate. We can do activities outside.
Yes.
So one of the recommendations is that you have good ventilation and you can practice some kind of social distancing while you're outside. And we can do that. As you saw, many of the restaurants are outside.
Yes.
Yes, many of the restaurants, we have kind of like that ocean breeze coming through. It can get chilly even. So it's nice. It's nice being outside, you know, and we don't have to be under that paranoia. And, you know, people are still wearing their masks. And, you know, we get our test results back no later than 48 hours. And if you need them back sooner, so you don't have that long wait like I'm hearing in the States. And I know people that, you know, up until they were due to travel had not gotten their results back. So I think we're doing a pretty good job, even though there's a lot left to be desired because we don't want any deaths.
Right.
But on a given day, we may hear that we've lost one or two people. Mm-hmm. I think the maximum has been six people. But since March, I think we've hit the 400 mark in terms of people having transitioned because of COVID. So it's not that bad. It really isn't.
It's actually very commendable. And I can say, like you mentioned firsthand, the protocols are in place. You know, people are respectful of the social distancing and the mask wearing and the sanitizing. Everywhere I've gone since I've been here, that's, you know, those things are in place and they're being followed. And your success speaks for itself. So that's wonderful.
Let's keep praying that, you know, it remains. You know, we're gearing up for kind of like a second wave, and I'm just thankful that the weather is such that we don't have to be inside, because I think that also has not helped in the U.S. and in Europe with the cold weather and people having to be inside, you know, closed spaces without ventilation.
Yeah. I'm sure that's the case. So yeah, so let's move on from that. You know, it's just that I touch on it just because it's a reality of where we are in life. And so I just wanted to touch on it, but we're by no means going to tabernacle or stay here. We have too much to talk about when it comes to Dakar and Senegal. So just kind of describe to us what that Senegalese experience is like. I mean, in terms of your culture, your customs, the cuisine, which has been magnificent since I've been here. I came thinking, I may, you know, shed a couple of COVID pounds, but hey, I don't know if that's going to actually happen. So, and even the language, the history, you know, all of that, the economy, just a little bit touch on those things, the Senegalese experience.
Right. The Senegalese experience. So I guess the Senegalese experience now is a little bit different from, you know, before COVID. But the Senegalese experience. So as a tourist coming here, I think one of the enjoyable points, one of the enjoyable things to partake in is the culture, is the arts. You know, I think I took you to one of the galleries, one of the many art galleries in the city. And we did pottery, you know, we learned the traditional pottery technique.
Yes.
From the northern part of Senegal, and we're going to do some painting. And, you know, so every December, for example, the city opens up to the arts, and every 2 years we have a huge arts festival. But literally at any given time that you come to Senegal, you can experience fashion, you can experience visual art, you know, cinema, film, music, you know, of course, the music, you know, there's live music in all of the you know, the restaurants and the nightclubs.
Yes.
There's a lot of that going on. And the intellectual scene also. Senegal's known for some great historians, Cheikhanta Diop. And so, you know, we have cafes where you can, you know, meet up with people and, you know, you can find yourself in discussion. It's pretty much whatever you really like to do. There's in terms of the water sports, surfing is really big. I think we have probably one of the largest black surfing communities.
Wow.
That's
a little known fact.
You know, deep sea diving, and you can even do kayaking. We have, of course, you know, the island of Gorée and the role it played in the Atlantic traffic of humans for slavery in the United States. We have also the northern part of Senegal. We have the Senegal River. Again, we have a boat trip that you can take from Saint Louis, which is on the coast, and you can go what we call up north to some of the very old towns and trading posts from, you know, even the medieval time. So for the history buffs, if you really are into the slave trade and also, even more recently, we have the historian Sheikh Tajouk, who is world-renowned in terms of how he proved that the African people on the West Coast actually came from the Nile Valley, Egypt. And there are cafes where you can meet up with people. There are tons of art galleries, museums. We have one of the largest museums of African civilization. It opened up, it was last year or maybe the year before COVID. So that's also, it stores, I think, one of the largest collections of artifacts around African history of the whole continent. And so there's something for everyone, you know, again, the fashion, learning the art and technology piece, young people. I think that many of them have either studied in the US or and speak English. And so there's always, conferences and workshops around, starting a business and how to work tech companies and all of that. Yeah, it's a real tree feel, as well as a real artsy feel, as well as a real historical feel. Yeah, feel.
And your primary language is French?
Actually, French may not take you that far among intellectuals, yes, but people who you're going to be dealing with day to day in the marketplace, even among Senegalese intellectuals in office situations, people prefer to speak Wolof. Wolof is not the only language other than French spoken here. We do have communities that speak what we call Pular. And Pular is a language that is spoken throughout West Africa. Many U.S. words have its origin in is Wolof. Yeah. You dig? Dig it?
Yeah.
That's from Wolof. That's from Wolof, meaning do you understand?
Yeah.
For example.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Senegal in particular has influenced the U.S. in many, everybody knows about, for example, Bugs Bunny.
Yes.
That was taken actually from Brer Rabbit Tales. Brer Rabbit Tales also come from Senegal.
Wow.
The most popular Senegal folk tales are about a trickster rabbit. So there are many, many, many cultural, remnants from the slavery time. Music also. The same thing. Some of the blues are directly from the northern part of Senegal. Music lovers, this is a great destination. Not only, you have at any given night 20 or 30 different concerts going on from really good musicians and music groups, but those who love the blues and can see the direct connection. Also in dance, sabah, Senegalese dance is very popular in the U.S. And Senegalese love their dance, and they have their mbalak, which is a mixture of traditional and contemporary music, and they dance their traditional dances to that contemporary music. So you can find it, in the clubs and little dance ceremonies on street corners, everywhere.
Wow. Yeah.
It's vibrant. The city is vibrant. And it's a festival.
Yes. I agree. I mentioned in my intro that I can't imagine what took me so long to get back here, but I'm certainly glad that I am back. And so long ago on my first visit, I heard over and over again from your Senegalese natives that I was Senegalese, that I may not know of, but I had Senegalese in my blood. And so I think we've discussed this a little, and my features and my height and everything, and they're probably right. And I feel real comfortable here, so I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, let me tell you something. That's a compliment also, because Senegalese men, they think that their women are probably among the most beautiful. Senegalese women do have kind of a charm, and a charm that you don't find necessarily in other West African countries. They're really known for their dress, and you know, they just have this, you know, you're never too dressed up going out, and there's an air of, you know, I know I look good, even though, you know, I'm not saying it, I just am. And so I think you carry a little bit of that, Terry. So you know what, it's also about the attitude. It really is. And some people just have that attitude naturally. They don't mean anything. They don't, you know, they're not deliberately trying to put on. Naturally born kind of that kind of way. You know, you walk with your head tall, and so it's more than just facial features, you know. And the more I stay here, the more I see that many of us in the U.S. have not been, you know, diluted or whatever. You know, it's straight from the continent. The way certain people carry themselves. And Senegalese have, especially Senegalese women, they have a reputation for being very attractive. And yeah, so there's a little bit of that when they tell you that. That's a compliment.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So tell me, as we begin to wrap this up, what does the future of Senegal look like in, say, the next 10 years? Because, you know, I hadn't visited the country for almost 20 years, and the change has been so dramatic. It's, I mean, maybe that could be the case anywhere, but I really feel like I'm visiting again for the first time. So, you know, what do you see Senegal in like 10 years?
Yeah. I see, well, first of all, you should know that there's oil has been found off the coast of Senegal. We need to be very smart about that. I think we're going to see the capital of Dakar move. There's a new up-and-coming city called Djamnajo, which is kind of destined to be the new capital. The airport has already moved out that way. I think there'll be a lot more exploitation in agriculture because there is so much land. Many Europeans and Americans know that there's kind of like a saturation in the West. And with such a young African population, Africa is considered the new frontier as a marketplace. But we want to change that around and actually, you know, be a center for, you know, smart technology and investment, and, you know, in the interest of the people here on the continent. So yes, there's going to be a lot of investment, a lot of money circulating and coming in, because this is considered the new frontier. You know, I think with the change in administration, I personally have already participated on a panel talking about that, you know, for people who are advising Biden about the continent. But I think people know, you know, that there's so many more opportunities because there's so much to do. Whereas, you know, when you have a bureaucracy and you know, you have many fields that have been saturated in the U.S., this is just, it's new and upcoming. Over 65, I don't know, maybe 75% of the people are, you know, very young here. So it's gonna be popping, you know, as they say.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a lot of buzz about Dakar, and it's no longer flying under the radar. You guys are, you know, have hit that blip on the map, and people are talking about it. You know, and if I mention it, people are not saying, oh, where is that? They're saying, I love Senegal. I love Dakar.
So. Yeah. There have been quite a few people who brought African-Americans in particular over to invest in land. If you've heard of the singer Akon, he is creating a new city called Akon City. It's supposed to be a smart city, technology-wise. It's supposed to be like Wakanda, you know, because there are people who know that this is the future and they're coming. They're coming. So, you know, I invite everyone who has the opportunity to discover, you know, even if they don't even want to think about investing, I think that it's great to know kind of like where you came from and what your people are doing now, and that you do have a place. You know, you have two places. You know, there are a lot of people in the US, you know, you have the Jewish community, they have the US and they have Israel, you know, that as African Americans and Africans from the diaspora, you know, you don't just have the US, you too can claim too. And you can choose, you know, and it would be great to have a foot on the continent for that purpose. Yeah.
So just a few pop-up questions, you know, real quick answers. What is that must-try food in Dakar, in Senegal? Must-try food.
Oh, it's the national dish. It's the fish and rice called Cheboujen. That is absolutely a must. It has some very particular ingredients that give it a very particular taste, hard to reproduce outside of Senegal. So if you come here, you have got to eat it. And I guarantee you will be looking for that dish in the US when you go back. Yes, and it's called Cheboujen.
Cheboujen.
And you can get it cooked in a red sauce or cooked in a white sauce. So you have Cheboujen Bohonk and Cheboujen Bohonk. Yassa Poulet is also good. Yassa chicken.
Okay. All right. So what is that hidden gem, in your opinion, you know, that thing that's not widely known, a hidden gem, whether it be a place or whatever, what is it? What's the hidden gem?
The hidden gem. There's so much that I really like about the country, but something I didn't speak about is the Teranga, which is hospitality.
Ha!
Which is where Southern hospitality comes from. When you get to know Senegalese people, you know, you really get to experience to what extent they will go for their guests. And that's a charm. And that's a hidden gem here in the country. So it pays to kind of get off the beaten track and make conversation when you're in the marketplace. You'd be surprised. You know, one of the reasons for haggling is so that people can get to know you and get to, you know, kind of show you the Teranga. So it's called Teranga, and it's hospitality. And that's one of the hidden gems of Senegal.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you feel it. It's such a welcoming, and even though I'm here visiting with family, and of course you kind of expect amongst family you would feel it, but no, it's like exponential, the hospitality. Very, very welcoming. So I would agree with you there. And so last, what is that something that a visitor would want to take home with them to remind them of their visit to Senegal? What would that thing be that they could take home with them?
Wow. I would think a nice Senegalese outfit. A nice Senegalese outfit, traditional outfit. People like to dress up in their traditional outfits on Fridays. So it's something that, you know, you could wear, I guess, to church or, you know, on Sundays or some special days, but not to just sit in your closet, but actually to wear. As I said, Senegal fashion industry, and even in terms of traditional clothing, is like really on top on the continent. So I would go home with an outfit with embroidery and in the material called bazin, you know, kind of with an outfit decked from top to bottom. I would invest in that.
Well, I'm going to take you up on that recommendation. I have pieces from when I was here before, but I won't be leaving without some new pieces. Yes, great. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Stephanie, I want to thank you for joining me today and just sharing your story, sharing your country, which you obviously, you know, love very much. And you have provided us with a wealth of information and just helped us to understand why anyone who is considering a trip to Africa should not sleep on Dakar. And so I just want to thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. And I hope to, you know, I hope to people give me a phone call and say, hey, I'm here with Traveltude. And yeah, Terry told us, you know, and I'll be, you know, very happy to share and, you know, and be a resource for people who are interested in coming. You are welcome. Taranga.
Thank you so much. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Travel Tude Podcast. We hope you will tune in on Tuesday, January 26, 2021, where I'll talk with Marvin Parks, an American expat living in Paris. He has a pretty intriguing story, and you will want to hear what Traveltude he will bring to the show. Future. And remember, when it comes to travel, the adventure is not just in the going, it's your entire way of thinking about the travel experience. The preparation, the anticipation, and the satisfaction. It's more than a vibe, it's more than a mood, it's a travel tube.